Hey folks, this is John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that I record in my vehicle on my drive back from work as a high school instructional coach. If I can't record it in the vehicle, I record it at the house or in my neighborhood while I'm trying to figure out next steps towards this new normal that will be the fall. And as we're working towards our pandemic, as an instructional coach, I work with teachers all across the United States, littles, middles, high schools, and adult learners alike, in conversations with people who work at the university level, but also people who work at homeschooling, Catholic schools, private schools. And so I try to lean in each week and take the best of what I've been squeezing my sponge, filling it up with, and squeeze it out here in about 10 to 15 minutes of a podcast. So I hope you're finding them helpful. If you like what you're hearing, we can talk further on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at MeehanEDU. That's Meehan like my last name and EDU like teaching, because I love teaching and want to get better at it. Back episodes of the podcast are available on your favorite podcasting app. If you want to like or leave a comment, that's awesome. And new episodes drop every Monday. And I have a website, www.adrenalinerush.com. That's adrenaline with an E, like educational adrenaline, because I'm fired up to teach, and I hope that I can help get people get fired up too. A bunch of resources there. Use them any way you like to. Templates, whatever you want. Borrow them, steal them, adapt them, make them your own, as they would say in American Idol way back in the day. But I also wanted to talk about today making something else your own, which is taking this fight to this pandemic and how we have to be a team of educators, but also looking out for our own individual best interests. And I'm going to say some things today that might be shocking, might be offensive. My goal is never to make people feel blamed or shamed or bullied ever. I'm always on the side of the kids. I'm always on the side of the teachers. I try to be. Even when teachers are making mistakes, I try to do the best I can as an instructional coach to say, hey, if it's a well-intentioned mistake, then fail. And fail boldly. I mean, I think that's actually a quote from St. Thomas Aquinas in the Catholic tradition. If you're going to sin, sin boldly, right? Like, make the mistake in good faith. That, oops, I didn't mean that. But I meant to do it the right way when I did it the wrong thing. So, what does this look like? Because as we're talking about coming back to school, there have been a lot of voices in the past week or so that have weighed in on education. And the idea has become more and more a reality that many of us will be going back to our physical classrooms before there is universal testing available, a vaccine available, and safe and appropriate PPE available. And I guess the conversation today is, like I said, maybe a little bit more heated than normal, because though I'm just a guy, like I said, I have a website, I wrote a book, I try to just talk the talk. I also walk the walk. I'm in the classroom and I'm doing the work, which is very different than certain people who are making some of these calls. The President of the United States, for example, he's not an educator. He was not a product of public school education. He does not send his own children to public schools in the United States. The Secretary of Education is not an educator, does not take part in the conversations in the public schools. And though I do work in a private school and I see a lot of benefits about working in private schools for sure, I've worked in the public schools. I work continually with public schools in my work in consulting, in my work in speaking and presenting. And so I think without being too glib, I don't know, if you listen to my podcast, you can shoot me a tweet. Tell me I'm being glib. I'm on Twitter at MeehanEDU. Unlike certain people who have no books on their bookshelves, I'm happy to learn from any mistakes I'm making. So let's talk. But I don't think I'm being glib when I say I think I know the rank and file classroom maybe better than Betsy DeVos does. Just a thought. Could be way off, but I don't think I am. And what I'm hearing in the conversations is that the issue is becoming increasingly politicized, and I want to own this before I get any further into this podcast, because this is not a political podcast. Wearing a mask should not be a political issue. Sending students back to an infected area should not be a political issue. Marching for the fact that human dignity is real and that people's lives matter regardless of the color of their skin should not be a political issue. But unfortunately in the United States, particularly, this is a very bifurcated two-party system where if you don't care strongly enough about an issue, then you must care strongly about the opposite side of that. And that's not healthy or good for anybody. But here we are, and teachers and children are being asked to go back to school because that's the safest alternative, or that's the desired alternative, in accordance with what the pediatrician said a few weeks ago. Now, I did a podcast on that a few weeks back, but I also talked about when you get into the nitty-gritty of what the pediatrician said, they said, to go back is great, but we want to go back safely. That was always their statement. And then a week later, they actually walked that back and said, well, look, we really maybe weren't clear enough. The safety part is really what we want. The going back part is, you know, icing on the cake, but we got to make sure that this is safe. And so as the president and the Secretary of Education have come forward saying all these things about everyone has to go back, naturally the conversation this week has been freaking out. Teachers and school administrators, and everyone's trying to figure out, how do we do this? There have been some very high-profile schools and districts who said, hey, that's nice that you feel that way, but that's just not how we're playing ball. In Los Angeles and in San Diego, they said, nope, we're just not going to do that. There's been some schools I've seen in Indiana who said, that's not happening for us. And one by one by one, these schools, these districts are opting out. It's important to know that when it comes to the funding for your local school, if you are a public school, most of the funding is done on the local and on the state level. Very little, about 10% of the funding that your school is receiving, generally speaking, comes from the national level. So that's important. Know that. So when you hear these, you know, mandates from on high, whether it's Barack Obama who's saying it, George W. Bush who's saying it, Donald Trump, Joe Biden, none of these people are day-to-day the person who determines whether or not your school stays open for the lion's share of where its funding comes from. So that is important. But the conversation has become, hey, if schools refuse to reopen, well, then we're going to divert the funding we would give to them, because why should they get paid if they're not doing that job? And, you know, if you're talking about this from a sheer, like, you know, economy standpoint, I understand if everything is equal, don't pay for things that are not working, right? Fine. Don't fund programs that are dead programs. That I understand. But I would rather have programs sort of sitting on idle on the back shelf, on the back burner, maybe a dead that can be brought back to life program, than a single person who is forced to be back and then to lose something that they can't get back as a direct result of being brought back into a school environment. And I'm talking specifically about teachers and students and the matter of consent. I know as parents, you individually reserve the right to pull your kids from any school if you don't feel it's safe. And I do understand that for many people, that is an option they are considering. But I know that most of the people who are listening to this are not just parents. They are typically teachers or educators, administrators. And so to the audience who I'm primarily speaking to, your school might be telling you, hey, we're coming back. You have to come back. And if you don't come back, you don't have a job here. And that's terrifying, because any schools that I'm seeing who are being forced to come back are being lumped in with the idea of, hey, it's time we got the economy up and running again. Other schools, other districts are all doing the same thing. And other industries have been doing this for a long time. Amazon drivers, grocery employees, people who work at grocery stores, people who work in healthcare industries, police officers, fire personnel. All these people have been working through the pandemic with no shutdown, right? All these essential workers. But what I say to that is true, except some of the people who you've mentioned there signed up every day to put their health and safety on the line for the greater good of protecting and serving their community. Our police and our fire are examples of those sorts of things. The remainder of the people that you've mentioned, I mean, hospitals likewise, you know, and even in a pandemic, we're seeing record cases of hospital workers coming down with issues of feeling overwhelmed, feeling anxious, feeling depression, suicidal tendencies, because they feel like they're being asked to stop the bleeding when the wounds just keep happening. They don't have the right support. They don't have the right funding to make this happen. And that's a real scare. That's a very, very real thing. So as we're opening schools up, we're having the conversation about it. What I'm saying is, yeah, it's true that Home Depot may have been open, and Walmart may have been open, and Target and Giant and Safeway and, you know, Wegmans or Whole Foods. That's true. All these things have been open. But you're talking about like giant warehouse-sized spaces that might be like, you know, 60,000 square feet. I'm talking about opening a school where every classroom is only like 600 square feet. That's a problem. Also, when I go to Wegmans or when I go to Walmart, I don't typically spend 7 hours in that building with really high ceilings, really high roofs, just walking around, being in proximity with, 15 to 20 other human beings in the same aisles that I'm shopping in. I know what I need. I walk in, I grab it, and I'm out. And the people who are stocking the shelves, or the people who are ringing things up, or the people who are taking care of just the general needs of the consumer, the customer there, are usually not hanging out in such close proximity that they're patting me on the shoulder or giving me a fist bump as I'm doing good work in the work that I came there to do, if that makes any sense. Now, it's true, as an individual teacher, I don't have to give kids fist bumps or high fives. I don't have to pat them on the back like, nice job, Jimmy. I can observe a certain amount of social distancing. But I'm also talking about schools that are asking teachers to breathe the same recycled air that the students would be breathing, with no proof that the students are or are not carrying any sort of asymptomatic COVID. And that's a real issue here, because if you just go by the, well, we'll do tests when we walk in the buildings, we'll just give them the old scan, the digital thermometer, no contact. Okay, fine. You ever see that episode of The Office where Michael Scott goes for a run right as a car is passing by, and then he swears to everyone on the office staff that he ran 31 miles per hour. These drive-bys with like a, you know, like a how fast was the baseball, not really effective ways to measure how fast individual people were going when you have 200, 300 people arrive at your school all at once and you're trying to point the gun at them like a scanner as they come in through the doors. Likewise, false tests, false positive, asymptomatic characters, World Health, asymptomatic carriers. The World Health Organization makes it super clear that about 80% of people who are carrying the COVID virus are doing it asymptomatically with very low fevers, if they have any fever at all. If you take Tylenol 2 hours before school, you can beat any temperature test they would give you. And the same type of family who would say, look, I'm just tired of my kids in the house, I gotta get them out of here. Do you think they would be inclined on any given day to say, oh, he has the sniffles, stay home? Or they're going to say, suck it up, buttercup, and head to work. Unfortunately, what this does to our educators, what it does to our schools, is it asks me as a teacher, and I hope you can hear it in my voice, like, I'm all in. I do this podcast, I don't get paid for it. I pay a hosting fee for this podcast that I set up my website, and I set up the podcast, and I set up my Twitter, and I give tons of content away for free because I just love the work that I'm doing. I love the kids, I love the job, I love the content, I love the research, I love teaching. I'm generally geeked out about all of that stuff, and I'll do it for free. If you asked me, if you tweet at me, we would hang out, and anybody who could tell you, like, I vouch for it. I think I'm the real deal. That said, I love my family more than I love your family. It's no disrespect. I'm sure your family's awesome. But I love my family more. And my family lives hours away from where I live in Washington, D.C. So if I want to see my family for Thanksgiving, I have to plan on what meal I'm going to be coming up to join them for, or what appetizers or what salads I'm going to bring. Does that make sense, right? If it's Christmas time, I have to plan, okay, what gifts am I getting for persons 1, 2, and 3? And I pack those in the car days or weeks in advance. I can't just pop in and see them on a Wednesday afternoon when I'm bored at school. Well, if I have to plan what food I bring, and if I have to plan what gifts I bring, I also have to be aware of what viruses or what contagions I might bring to my house. As I'm thinking about my own family members in this time of mental health issues, that family is so important, right? The loss of loved ones. Do I want that on my head and on my conscience that, hey, mom, dad, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, whoever it is, would that I could see you, but I can't. Because you see, I've been around somebody else's people for like the last 2 weeks. And as long as I'm around those people, I got to self-quarantine. I have this incubation period and I might be asymptomatic carrying that home. I know what every year my grandmother, who's now in her 90s, she lives in an assisted living facility. And we bring her for several hours out of the facility with the family, or we did for the past 10 years or so. She has very advanced dementia. She doesn't really know what's going on. But it feels like it's not the holiday without my babci there. It's my Polish grandmother. So we'll have her to our family event. And she is all bundled up and wrapped up. And we tell old stories. We sing old songs. We try to get her to laugh a little bit. And sometimes there's a glimmer or a spark that, like, she's still there, right? But in the end, know that there's only a limited amount of time that she can be out of the assisted living facility. So we make sure she's bundled up safe and get her back home with one of those like medic rescue kind of van services, which have been fantastic for, like I said, the last decade. But it gets to a point, and it got to a point where her illness, her decline is so pronounced that we no longer can feel comfortable bringing her to our house. Rather, we have to go see her. Because it's not safe to bundle her up time after time after time. Because like a week or 2 weeks after every holiday, invariably she started to come down with like the sniffles or the common cold or like the flu or pneumonia. And that's not safe and that's not kind and that's not just and that doesn't affirm her human dignity. That even though she doesn't have the cognition about where she is up to, we should not be putting her in a position where she should be getting sick because we just wanted to see her. That's a selfish, that's a very dehumanizing thing. And I know that part of this is safetyism. Oh, you try to police everything. You can't police everything. You have that certain risk. That's what life is all about. But I'm asking you to take a moment and look at the difference between camping in the woods by choice and then going to your local zoo, climbing over the fence, and getting in the care with the cage with the bears and saying, I'm just going to spend the night here. Right now, we don't have an answer for what this COVID stuff looks like. The Betsy DeVos interview that aired on CNN was very eye-opening that for all of the desire to open schools and open schools safely, when pushed for protocol, we don't have that. All these plans for social distancing, when you deal with the children who are barely washing their hands, and the time it takes to get students lined up and temperature checked, or to make sure that students are not carrying diseases, that there's so much logistics in there. So yeah, pie in the sky. I think anybody who listens to this podcast, anybody who's on Twitter, anybody who's in education would tell you, I am all in for wanting to go back. It's way more work to do it online. But if going back means that innocent, safe people will no longer be safe, I think that's a hard no. And if that means I can't then go back to my own people, that's a hard no. You know, even if it's so much as like 0.1% of persons who are infected would die under the age of 25, you're still looking at in the United States about 100,000 new deaths over the course of the year. And when you look at the infection rates of this stuff, we have to take it seriously. I know it says, you know, the rates are so low. Oh, it's only 1% infection rate. 1% infection rate means 1 out of 100 people have this disease. 1 out of 100 people. If I went to the faculty break room and had a jar of M&Ms and I said, there are 100 of them in here, one of them's poisoned, would you eat out of that jar of M&Ms? Or if I said, hey, 1 out of 100 cafeteria meals is going to be poisoned every day, would you ask and require every person in your building to eat that cafeteria meal? Or would you say, you know what? Maybe we do it from home for a minute. It's not ideal, but it's way safer than that 1 out of 100 chance. And I'm flabbergasted and floored that it's become a politicized issue. So I want to encourage anybody who's listening to say, these are just some talking points to go to those conversations with. If your admin team is saying, we're coming back, ask them. Ask them, do we have a form letter that we can use when a teacher or a student dies from COVID? And if they tell you, oh, we don't have that, then don't go back to that school. And then if they tell you, we do have that, you say, great. Why did you make that? Do you plan on us needing that this year? Because if 1 out of 100 people are infected, and if even 1 out of 1,000 people end up dying because there's no vaccine, because there's no treatment, because there's no plan, like, I don't know about you, but I would rather see my family one more time than to see your family one more time in person. And it's no disrespect. I love this work and I will gladly help out in any way that I can. But there are certain people who I'm, quote, ride or die for. And for me, and I think for many educators, that begins and ends in our home first. That's the reason why we do this work in the first place. We love our families. We love the work that we're doing. We love to come home and be able to share that with people we love. We should not be putting teachers in positions where they are compelled against their will to put students in positions where they will not be safe and not be supported. And I feel like I'm beating a dead horse talking to the choir, but I think it's important that teachers hear this. You're not crazy. You're not alone. I'm there with you every step of the way. So let's talk about it. I'm on Twitter at MeehanEDU. You want to hit me up my website. I can talk longer with emails and all that stuff. All that stuff is at adrenalinerush.com. God bless you. Stay safe. Stay home. Wear a mask. And we'll be back next Monday with more. Thanks again.